Hello everyone and welcome back to the Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. No episode number, of course. Thank you, Mr. Swain. Even though he did on the last one, he said the episode number.
Well, you know how the rules are, Chris. Me. Dean can
only
say
I'm
the
not
numbers.
Allowed?
You can't. Actually, you're the only one not allowed because you can't handle your numbers.
Yeah, but I love numbers more than anybody else.
That's
and I'm
true.
The one who's not allowed. It's not right, is it?
Nope.
So, as you can probably hear, I'm here with my good friend and partner in crime, Mads. How are you, mate?
I'm fine, thanks. How about you?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you very much. This is a Game Club episode and we're here to talk Soccer Kid. But what is an episode of Retro Asylum without some good old-fashioned waffle?
Yes.
So, without further ado, Mads, how have you been? What have you been up to? Anything exciting to report?
So, right now I'm really excited by the fact that I have this 1 liter beer can sitting right here that I'm trying to get my way through. It's beautiful. I went to Germany today and I had to go shopping a bit, so bought far too many different kinds of beer and stuff like that, so that's all good.
So you went shopping in Germany just for some beer?
Yes. Different kinds of beer.
Nice.
Yes, and nice. The funny thing is that I bought lots of Danish beer, but that's how it is, I guess.
Can you not buy beer in Denmark then?
Oh, I can, of course, but it's very, very much cheaper in Germany. So
it looks nice, actually. I've not got a beer, which is unusual for us recording at the back end of the week.
Mm.
And I don't have a beer, but I am looking enviously at your 1 liter can.
Yes, yes. Luckily, you can't reach it, so I'll be good. I'll be good. No,
so
what have I been up to?
If you hear deterioration in Mads' audio quality as we go through the next hour and a half or so, you know why.
Yeah, it's not the quality, it's the me. So, no worries there. But I've actually been up to some retro stuff, mate. I have been...
Good.
What was it? Only yesterday, I was at a concert with Pavement. Do you know Pavement? Like the band that was huge in the beginning of the 90s until the end of the 90s, something like that. I think they started in 89.
No,
Pavement, a huge indie rock band from, I forget where, in the US.
Okay.
Had a bit of a hit at some point about... around 93, 94 with the Cut My Hair, I think it was called.
How does it go?
I am not going to sing that right now, but thank you very much. No, it was great. I really loved... I've only recently started going to concerts again. I was at a Paradise Lost concert last week, so it's been really, really good fun getting back into that. I used to go to concerts all the time. I used to play myself as well. So being in the music scene is... been something I've been doing for many, many years, but I haven't been doing it the past, I'd like to say 10 years, something like that. Mm. So it was great getting back and getting out there. So definitely going to do some more of that now that I'm living here in the city.
So how was the moshing at the Paradise Lost concert? You said, you told me, I was very worried for you. You told me you were going to go moshing.
I was. And I did a little bit, but it was good. It was hot. Hot and sweaty.
Be careful. A man of your age.
True. But
be careful these days, mate.
When you go watch a band like Paradise Lost, 90% of the people there were my age. So not to worry, mate.
Senior citizens mosh pit.
At some point, the guy on stage, he was talking and interacting with the audience a bit, and he said something about here's a song for the old guys here. And not to get confused by the old guys here on the stage. So he was totally, he was in on the whole thing that, okay, we're just old fans coming to watch you guys. So
yeah, nice. Mm. I think you get to an age, don't you, when it seems like you get to an age when you stop listening to new music. And I don't know when that is.
Mm.
But most people do it, don't they? At some point, they get to an age where it's like, right, music finishes for me now here. I reckon for me it was somewhere near the end of the 90s, and I just really struggled with music after that.
I think it's very different with different people, of course. I mean, I do actually listen to a lot of new music, but I spent at least half of my time listening to stuff from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But the other half, I still try to get some new stuff in and discover new stuff.
So where do you find this new stuff then? I mean, do you... How do you find this new music?
Well, two different sources. One is friends. I've got a handful of friends and acquaintances that are still very much into the music. And the other part is actually just using the suggestion engines in something like Apple Music.
Spotify,
so listening to something you like, and then sometimes going down to that, you might also like this, the related section.
Yeah, giving it a go.
Yeah, and then you get to know new stuff as well.
Yeah. Hmm. I went to see a band as well a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
my favourite band is on my own.
Yes.
Because I didn't have any friends to go with.
That was a bit sad.
That was. But actually, I didn't mind. It was all right once I was there.
But I felt proper old because I went there yesterday with my kids, who are now grown-ups and can go and have a beer with me when we're going to concerts.
So did you go with? So you didn't go with all three of them, I assume?
No, Nadia isn't old enough, but the two.
No.
Two oldest ones, yeah.
How cool is that?
But the 16-year-old was whining that I wouldn't buy her a drink. So.
Happy days. I look forward to the day when I can go. My kids are into the worst kind of music, though. Like terrible, terrible pop music. But they've got some years for their taste to mature, though.
Yes.
There's nothing better than live music, though, is there? I mean, you get a real thrill from seeing a band that you really like live.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can't really describe the feeling, but it is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Pavement were great. I mean, they know their stuff. They haven't been doing any new music for 20 years, but they've, I think 10, 12 years ago, they decided, hey, we're going to go touring again. And so they went on one tour around the world, and then they had a 10, 12-year break, and then they thought, well, let's do it again.
Why not?
And they're just playing their back catalogue. They're not playing any new stuff. They're just having fun.
No one wants to hear the new stuff. Just play all the classics.
Yep.
So anything gaming-wise been tickling your fancy?
Well, apart from Soccer Kid, I'm going to commit heresy here and talk about some modern gaming. I've been playing Stray recently on my PS5 because I was a bit sad. It was sitting there on the shelf and I hadn't touched my PS5 for a long time. And I bought that Stray game when it came out for the kids. I never really played it myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm still actually undecided as to how much I like it. It's very much your standard action adventure with fetch quests galore and whatever. So it's very formulaic in that way, but it's also
quite a unique setting.
Yeah, it's a really unique setting. It's very beautiful, and for some reason it's just fun controlling that little nimble cat instead of being a huge brute with a gun as you normally are, right? Yeah. So it's actually, I've been playing that every morning for like an hour and a half, I think, with a cup of coffee, and that's been really, really good. So.
Yeah, like little sort of typical, as you say, typical action adventure, some light puzzling, exploration, light combat. Any combat, is there?
There is a sort of combat, yes, in some parts of the game. In other parts, you have to just run away when there's danger.
Yeah.
I do prefer the running away, actually. The combat isn't particularly good. So.
Yeah, I picked it up when it came out. Thinking, because it's quite a short game, isn't it? I think Andy from Playthrough has played it, and he said, what is it, 8 to 10 hours, depending on.
Well, if that's a short game, then yes, I guess. I think I've played it like 3-4 hours now, and I've got no idea how far I am.
Just a short game like Devil May Cry, mate.
Yes, exactly. Just like Devil May Cry.
Well, I've never switched it on. I really ought to try it, but I'm trying not to do this. I don't want to build a backlog of new games that I won't play.
Exactly.
Desperately trying not to do it.
Yeah.
That's good. What else?
I bought myself the game that was what I wanted to buy my PlayStation 5 for initially before it was even released. It was a PS5. And that was the next chapter in the Oddworld series of games. I love Oddworld. I've played those games since the first one came out on the PS1. The Apes Odyssey was the first one, right?
Apes Odyssey.
And I've got them all for the different platforms that they came out on. They switched from PlayStation to Xbox at some point with the Munch's Odyssey and Stranger's Wrath. I have those as well. And of course, I needed the new chapter, which is called Oddworld Soulstorm. So I just received that yesterday in the post, or maybe it was actually this morning in the post. So looking forward to trying that. No, I haven't. I've been away all day trying to put my old dad-in-law in the ground. So,
it's nice to come back and chat to me about Soccer Kid, isn't it?
Oh, yes. All
that nonsense. Yeah, I've got, again, I've got that as well, because it was a PS Plus game, famously a PS Plus game, because I think Lorne Lanning had his reservations about whether it should be. I think it was a PS Plus game on launch, which was unusual then, because it was before their service.
Okay. So I did pick it up. A PS Plus game, so...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was a PS Plus game on launch, I'm sure it was.
And I think it's still a PlayStation exclusive. I haven't seen it on the other platforms anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've never played an Apes game.
Oh, you should play the first one at some point, mate. But like the game we're going to be chatting about today, there is this whole thing about getting the bad ending, which is the one thing that irks me about Apes Odyssey.
Yeah.
I played Apes Odyssey and I loved it. And I saved so many. You save the Mudokons. There's a race that's called the Mudokons or Mudokons. And I saved a lot of these guys. Turns out when you get to the end, I hadn't saved enough. So I got the bad ending, even though this was a tough game to get through for me back in the day, I remember. Yeah. So you needed to save a lot of these Mudokons in hidden places. Like you need to discover hidden rooms to save extra of these guys. And that was just bad game design, if you ask me. So I never wanted to go back and try again.
So the only way then to go back and get the good ending is to start again?
Yes,
really?
Start over, because in the very, very first screen, there's a hidden room where you can like save 8 of these guys, which is a lot.
I mean, that was borderline unforgivable in 1993, when by the time, well, I suppose Apes Odyssey was probably only about 5 years later, wasn't it, if that?
So?
Four or five years, I reckon, the first Apes game.
Yeah,
can't be any later than that, can it? It was PS1.
Yeah,
yeah. It's annoying. We'll come on to this with Soccer Kid, obviously. But I think what's annoying is when you don't really know whether what you're doing is going to achieve a certain ending, and then to be told quite unceremoniously, "You're rubbish. Go back to the start." Is
so. I think my opinion on that is that it's unforgivable game design. You should always. Yeah. Award the player for finishing the game. But it's okay to award them even more if they do some extra goals.
Yeah, I agree.
But don't give them a bad ending. Give them the normal ending and the super happy good ending with unicorns and everything.
So you'd recommend the Apes games? Would you recommend to go back and have a look at those?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Great games to play.
Mm. Yeah, must
you
be.
Like them.
Yeah.
They're platformers, and they're a bit of it is skill based, but it's very much a puzzle, figuring out how to get
Every
through the
game's
different.
It's a puzzle game.
Exactly, but I really, really loved playing Apes Odyssey back in the day. Apes Exodus, I've actually never finished. I need to go back to that at some point. I only got that way later. Apes Exodus, Munch's Odyssey is actually quite good as well on the Xbox.
Which is the one where it's like got a wild, where he's got like a Wild West thing on the
That's
promo.
That's Stranger's Wrath.
Stranger's Wrath.
Yeah.
Right. Looks. They all look fun, don't they?
Mm, they are. They are.
Yeah. It's got like a nice light-hearted vibe to them.
Oh no, they definitely don't, mate.
They look as if they do.
Some dark shit. They are living in a really, really dark world where the Mudokons get eaten and used as slaves, and it's some really, really dark political messages that are sitting there.
Oppress the Mudokons.
Yeah.
And speaking of dark doo-doo, family show, Dead Space. You've been playing some Dead Space, of course, for playthrough.
Oh, been loving that, mate. I've played all the way through the first game.
Have you finished the first game now?
Yes, I have. I have. I've spent far too much time cutting limbs off necromorphs, but it's been great fun. And now I've actually played to our staging point twice.
Yeah.
Right. In Dead Space 2. So really looking forward to recording tomorrow with you guys.
Yes, we are. And I'm going to rely on you, because it feels like it was a long time ago now I got to the staging point. And we're going to ramp up the pace now over the next few weeks on Dead Space, which is good. So, plug for Playthrough. Come and listen to us talk about Dead Space 2 over the next few weeks over on Playthrough. I've been playing through Dead Space Extraction on the Wii.
Yeah?
That's really good. It's like one of those...
Is that an Unreal shooter or...?
Yeah, it's an on-rail shooter, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you barely ever get control of the camera.
Yeah.
And it uses the Wiimotes as almost like the pointer, like a light gun.
Mm.
And I did actually buy... I didn't have a Wii Zapper controller thing, you know, for the Wii.
What's the Wii Zapper? Is that the gun, the plastic gun you put it in?
Yeah, so it's like a... It's a shell, basically, where you put the Wiimote into it and the nunchuck into another bit, and you can hold it like a gun.
I've never used that, actually. How does it work?
It was good. The only problem with Dead Space is that you use the trigger on the Wiimote to shoot, which is fine and makes a lot of sense. But you can use kinesis, which is, for people who don't know Dead Space, it's like a it's like a pull magic power.
Yeah, it's telekinesis, right?
But you have to press the A button, which is on top of the Wiimote, to use kinesis. So when you're using the zapper and you've got one hand at the back of it and you've got one hand on the trigger, which feels natural for a gun, but then you have to use kinesis all the time because as the on-rails camera is spinning around the environment, you've got to telekinesis loads of the pickups that are dotted around. So you can't hold the thing like a gun because you need to have your finger constantly close to the button which uses the kinesis.
Mm.
So it kind of doesn't work with the zapper, which I was really disappointed with because I was looking forward to getting that little gun machine thing. And but it didn't work. Anyway, it works just as well with the nunchuck and the Wiimote separately.
Okay.
And it's really good in small doses. I mean, imagine Dead Space where all you have is the combat. So you obviously there's no exploration because it's on rails. And whereas in Dead Space you might fight 1,000 necromorphs per level, in Dead Space Extraction, you fight about 10,000. I mean, it just throws constantly hordes of these things at you. Yeah, and severing them with the gun is, you know, it's good fun in first person. But I've been getting to the end. I've been trying to finish it because we started playing Link to the Past in the community playthrough, and there's loads and loads of chat on Discord about that. So I want to join in with that. We've obviously got Wizball now in November in the game club. And then we're going to be playing Dead Space 2 again from tomorrow. So I want to try and get Extraction out of the way. So I've been ramping it up. I mean, it's only 10 missions long, and each mission's about 45 minutes. It's not a hugely long game.
Okay.
I find that, though, when you've... If you play more than one level, it gets a bit... It stops being fun.
Okay.
Like, I find it fun in small doses. And then it starts to get a bit tedious because you realise that all it's doing is just throwing the same enemies at you again and again. And again, and like that's fun. It is fun for a bit, you know, shooting these things. But there's not a lot of substance there at all. I think that it got a lot of plaudits for its story as well when it released in 2009 or 10 when it came out. But now, I mean, the story isn't great, you know. And I think because we've probably explored a lot of Dead Space lore, kind of familiar with what happens.
Yeah. So when is this set, really, time-wise in the lore?
So it's set before the events of Dead Space 1. So it's when things started going haywire on the Aegis 7 colony.
You've actually already seen, I guess, in the animated movie that was there?
Yeah.
Downfall.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's from the point of view of one of the security forces down on Aegis 7.
I'd like to see that narrative.
It's worth a play. I mean, for 6 or 7 hours of your life, it's definitely worth a play. Just what I would say is if you dig out your Wii and want to play it, it's fun.
Okay.
But I would just play a mission at a time, 45 minutes, give it a break, and then come back to it. And I've been, I think that's the best way to play it.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's more on that tomorrow, mate.
Indeed. Other than that, so yeah, as I said, really champing at the bit to get stuck into Link to Past. I haven't had the time yet because I've been trying to get through Dead Wonderful Space Extraction.
Game. Probably still. Probably still my favorite. I'm not sure. Definitely my favorite 2D Zelda. I mean, Breath of the Wild has a really, really special place in my heart, but definitely my favorite 2D Zelda.
Lots of chatter on Discord about it.
Hmm.
Isn't there?
Yes, indeed. That's been good. I'm probably not going to dive in myself because I don't have time to play yet another game, and I have finished it before, but let's see.
It's not. I mean, we had this chat, didn't we, last time? I mean, I think King Kong Groover and King Trilo were by the 1st of November, they were saying, I think we're about 40% of the way through in like the first day.
Yes. I think they really got stuck in. But I watched Riz play some of it on his stream, and he's a Link to the Past machine. He really knows what he's doing. He was tackling some of the boss fights in ways where I was just, my jaws just hit the floor because I had trouble with pretty much every single boss. I had to learn their patterns. He was just, these guys do like this. Done.
That's probably why he's 40% of the way through.
Yep.
Do you know what else I've been doing, mate? I've started playing the Resi, and again, forgive us, this is modern gaming chat, although this does link to retro games because it's Resident Evil 3.
Mm.
I've started playing that on my Steam Deck,
okay.
Just on the kind of on the couch when I've got half an hour.
Is there a remake of Resi 3 as well, or is it the old
version? Of course there is, mate, come on.
Okay.
There's a Resi 3 remake, came out a couple of years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Resi 3, do you like Resi 3?
Not a big Resi fan. I like Resident Evil 4, which I played on the Wii initially, I think. Played a few of them in co-op mode, online co-op, which have been good fun, but not a huge Resi fan, no.
No. Well, I'm a big fan of the classic Resi games, but Resi 3 isn't my film. Like many, you know, it's a bit of a garden.
Okay.
Really, it wasn't intended to be a fully fledged numbered game, and in the end, they made it one. It's very short. But I tell you, playing that 2-year-old game, we talked about Pixel Deck last time, so managed to get onto Pixel Deck, find out what the ideal settings were on the Steam Deck. Man, that game looks absolutely incredible on the Steam Deck.
Nice.
Incredible.
Mm.
Like, honestly, really blown away by it. Because I played Assassin's Creed Revelations, which is an 11-year-old game. You know, it plays well, but it looked all right. It looks like an 11-year-old game, which... Mm. Yeah, looks very pretty, but it won't blow you away this day and age. Man, Resi 3 Remake does things on a handheld that I would never thought I would see from a handheld. I mean, these are incredible visuals.
The Steam Deck is a beast. I'm loving it. I've been playing actually Helheim Hassel recently, which is a modern game.
I see you were playing that the other day.
It's a puzzle platformer from a Swedish developer, I think. Maybe Norwegian. I think the Swedish.
Yeah.
Really, really good fun, good humor, and it's a puzzle platformer where your main protagonist, he can disassemble his limbs, like he can take one arm and grab the other and fling it somewhere, and then that arm can run around, and he can throw his head and both legs and the last arm as well, so he can be just two legs, two arms, a head, and a torso controlled individually to solve puzzles. It's great fun, and these body parts can, like if you need to get somewhere high with your arm, you just attach an arm to a leg, then that leg can jump you somewhere. It's great fun, mate.
You gifted me that, didn't you? That Miles and Kilo, I think. I've played a bit of that, Miles and Kilo. I haven't played
that's the game I got from King Trilo.
King Trilo.
Pretty much my favourite game this year, actually. That was
It's
really, really good fun on the Steam Deck as well.
Yeah, it's fun. But I tell you, I mean, if you get a chance, download something from your Steam library, which is, if you've got anything, which is relatively modern.
Yeah.
You'll be, I was amazed. I mean, I didn't think it would be able to run something like that with enough fidelity. Yeah, I think it ticks along at about 45 frames per second as well.
Oh.
And it's absolutely stunning.
Yep.
I mean, even my son who thinks that anything that isn't PS5 is bad graphics, that's his thing. You know, it's terrible graphics unless it's Unreal Engine 5, he doesn't want to know.
Yep. No.
And he was looking over my shoulder and he was like, wow, what's that? Yeah, it looks incredible.
Mm. I'm going to have to check it out. But actually, recently, the Steam Deck has become my... Amiga instead. That's how I played most of Sucker Kid from the cottage, actually. So it's a brilliant emulation device.
That's how you did this. That's how you did save states, wasn't it, as well?
So I finished the game before you did, mate. I win. No talk about save states or saves coming here. I win.
I've got news for you. Neither of us have finished the game.
Okay, but let's get into that in just a little while.
Yeah, a couple of other little questions for you. So. What was it like pre-ordering a PSVR 2? I assume you've done that now?
I definitely haven't. Definitely haven't. I've had some good feedback from some of the guys on our Discord when I was chatting about my rage on my Quest 2 problems here the other day. And it seems that I've been doing stuff wrong. What I need to do is probably take the headset away from my daughter and put it on myself and actually do the configuration right. So what I was apparently doing was connecting through Wi-Fi instead of the cable that's also attached. So that was the problem. I'll get it properly set up.
What, so this thing has a cable attached to it that you can choose not to plug in and play it over Wi-Fi?
I think I haven't actually tried it myself, but it seems like the thing is that I asked my daughter to start what was called something along the lines of Steam Link something something, which connects over Wi-Fi, and I probably don't need to start that piece of software at all on the headset when I need it connected, when I've got the cable. But I'll get into that. I'll get into that at some point.
So no PSVR 2 for you then?
Definitely not. It's too expensive. I mean, if it was 300 quid, I would consider it. 200 quid, it'll be a no-brainer. I'll buy it, but 460 or 450, what was it?
That's more than that.
Even more than that? Yeah, although there's no way I'm paying more than I paid for the PS5 for a bloody VR setup. No way.
So I think with Horizon Call of the Mountain, I think it's 570.
Yeah, no way. And, there's no way in hell I'm paying.
Doesn't stop there. So I think then if you want to get the dock, which allows you to charge the hand controllers without connecting them via USB to the PS5, that's another 70 quid.
So okay.
You're up to 640 there.
Yes, yes.
So that would make the cost of a complete VR setup on PS on the PlayStation about £1,100.
So
if you include the cost of the PS5,
it'd be a very, very cold day in hell before I pay that kind of money for a console VR experience. I could pay that money, I could buy the most brilliant GPU ever and put it in my PC and have a far superior VR experience using just the stuff I have on the PC right now.
It's meant to be good though, this PSVR 2. It's meant to be a real upgrade on the original.
Yeah, well, that's a no-brainer because the original is crap compared to the PC stuff.
You're such a PC snob.
I am. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I've never gone down the PC VR route.
No, I don't know enough. PSVR. I don't know I enough really about the PlayStation VR at all to talk about it. So, but I've had a few PC headsets, and I think the Quest 2 is actually quite good, for example. So,
yeah. There is, for anyone who's interested and wants to know a bit more detail, well, any kind of details, Mads and I don't know huge amounts about the techie side of it. There is a guy called, I think it's Ian Highton on Eurogamer, who is well into his VR. And he had quite a substantial hands-on with PSVR 2 at a Sony press event a few weeks ago. It's well worth reading his article. I shared it in our playthrough Slack because Andy over there is particularly a huge fan of VR gaming. He was really impressed, and this guy is right across all forms of VR, so he is to my mind a decent authority on it. It's well worth checking out. It is a massive price,
and still show me the killer app. I haven't seen one VR game that I think would be game of the year yet at all. I mean,
no.
I haven't seen one VR game that would be my 20th best game of the year so far.
Yeah.
There's been some fun little experiences, like Serious Sam was great fun. There's some stuff that's good fun to just try. It's a curiosity. But actual good games, I haven't experienced them yet. I've just bought, as I talked about last time, the Half-Life experience, Half-Life Alyx, which is supposedly...
That's a game rather than experience, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, which is supposedly the first actually good VR game. So I'm really looking forward to trying that at some point.
Yeah. Now I'm looking forward to hearing how you get on with that.
So what I really wanted to play in VR really was actually Star Wars Squadrons. So once I get this set up and get it running, I want to try that because... flying an X-Wing or something like that out in space in VR. That sounds like heaven to me.
Oh, it's dead fun. Did you try the... I don't know whether you've got... Have you got the Star Wars Battlefront games on the PC?
No.
The multiplayer games. So that on the PlayStation, on the PS4, that had an experience. And that was... That was good. That was a VR experience, which lasted about 15, 20 minutes.
So I've tried actually Squadrons in VR, like when it was just released, but that was on my old version of the Oculus. And it didn't work brilliantly, I think. So I'm looking forward to trying that on the Quest 2.
Yeah. I played Resi 7 pretty much right the way through, other than the really scary parts in VR, because it is absolutely almost unbearable at times. Scary. But there are a couple of times I had to take it off. But yeah, and to be honest, I feel like I've got a decent stomach for it as well. I don't really get The only time I ever felt sick playing it was playing Wipeout, when I did feel quite sick playing Wipeout.
Well, I definitely feel sick from it, so I need those games that lets you zoom or teleport from place to place.
Rather than walking.
Walking, continuous motion, when there's something your brain can latch onto that tells it that I should be feeling this movement as well. That's tough for me. But flying, that's why I want to try the Squadrons game, because flying in space, unless you're flying really close to a huge space station or something like that, that gives you a feeling of motion, there's nothing tricking your brain to say that there's movement here. So flying in space actually works.
Yeah.
I remember I played Descent, what's it called? No, once again, it's Elite Dangerous. I played Elite Dangerous in VR once. It was great fun until I had to fly down on one of the space stations and dock.
Oof.
So all of a sudden I'm not flying in space, I'm flying towards this planet sized space station, and I'm flying into it, and I'm turning around and trying to find the right place. I got so sick, I felt sick the next day.
Oh god. Yeah, I did lose my stomach a little bit playing Wipeout in VR. That did make me go a little bit. The only time really I've ever really felt sick. The other thing I'm trying my best to ignore at the moment is, so God of War Ragnarok comes out next week.
Yes, it does.
And we will stop all this horrendous modern gaming chat. We will, but I am really trying my best not to buy. I loved the original God of War. Well,
but have you played all of them, Chris?
Original. Yeah, I've played all of them.
You have? Okay.
I couldn't have played the PS4 game if I hadn't played all the others, Mads. So
I've only played the first one. I had that for the PS2, and I played it back in the day, and I loved it. But some reason, I haven't played any other God of War.
Oh, they're really good. I mean, God of War 2 and God of War 3 are really good. And the reboot, the PS4 reboot, is incredible.
Okay.
But the reviews are starting to drop for Ragnarok, and it's like 10 out of 10, 9.5 out of 10.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm trying my best not to think about it. I've still got Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope came out a couple of weeks ago. I haven't even started that yet. I haven't even tried it.
Okay, so we'll try to
too much.
Convince you to not buy Ragnarok, because that's probably a huge game that you won't have time to dive into anyway.
Well, not, but it'll be at the expense of other things, and at the moment I've got plenty of podcast games to be keeping me going.
Yes.
Final little tidbit before we move on to Soccer Kid. See the Evercade EXP release date was pushed back.
Yes, see that? I saw, yep.
Only by 3 weeks or so, to the December the 15th. I'm sure people have seen this by now. That's fine, you know, that's all right. Just a few weeks back.
Yep, no worries.
Apparently it was to spend a bit more time to hone some of the technical features and abilities.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds fine to me. I'd rather postpone the delivery instead of putting a half-baked product out there. So.
Yeah. There was a big feature on this. The most recent retro gamer had a huge feature on the Evercade EXP.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it. I'm really looking forward to this. Quite like this Tate. How do you say it?
Tate. I say Tate, but it's probably Tate.
So I like the idea that you can just flip it, you know, for the likes of 1942 and whatnot. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it. I really am. I think it's going to be a good piece of kit. But for those who have ordered, it has been moved back to December the 15th. So, mate, I think it's time to thank the people who make all of this possible.
Yes. Let's thank all of our beautiful patrons from the Patreon site. You want to go first?
You've got to read the correct list now. You can't be like Steve Erickson.
I always try to be better than Steve, so no worries there.
in every way possible. We love you, Steve. We do, really.
Yes.
He won't listen to this, so you can say whatever we want.
That's not true.
I'll go first.
Yes.
Nick Smith.
Pete Rogers.
Rune P.
So he's called Rune.
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 Rune P.
Sorry, Rune. I'm sorry about how Chris pronounces your name.
It looks like Rune P to me.
Yes, it does. It does. New game, Old Flame, the podcast. Loving those guys, by the way. I'm listening to every single episode they put out immediately. They're doing good stuff. Yeah.
I do need to catch up.
They had the developer on for the game they were discussing last time. What's it called that?
It wasn't Wiz and Liz. That was game in the 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot the title of that game. But they're doing really good stuff. And I think we should pick up... Initially, they started with a focused podcast where they just talked about the game, but it's been very, very quickly getting into RA or playthrough territory with the waffles there. And they're spending like half an hour just talking about snacks. Maybe we should introduce good that lads. At some point. Yes.
Snack chat.
Yes, snack chat. It's really good. No, loving those guys, so it's good.
We could do biscuit chat, but Tempe Arcade kind of already does that. But
yes,
I do love
a biscuit. I think let's not move into their territory.
We won't talk biscuits.
I'll send you some more of that beautiful Danish licorice at some point, and then discuss
that. Oh, that's terrible, that thing. You should do, though? We've got the Fusion retro event in a couple of weeks. You should send me some, and I can take it to that and dish it out.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And capture the reactions on video.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've just told everyone I'm going to do it. So,
yeah, that's no good, Chris.
Probably not
that's
a good idea.
Moving
Whose
on.
Whose turn is it?
It's your turn.
Christopher Bolton.
Damon Crockett.
Dylan Darch.
And Bitmap Soft.
Alec Plint.
Mike's RetroTech.
Derek Young.
Dave Velociraptor.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
SEIC.
Adam
Hyde. IEC, sorry.
I think it's Cy EC, isn't it?
Ah, Cy EC. Okay,
Simon EC, I think.
Yeah. Was it your turn? Mate. Is it my turn again then?
Oh my god. This is worse than doing this with Steve.
Mate, you said Adam Hyde while I was actually asking how to pronounce SIEC, but okay. Chris O'Regan, old friend of the show.
James Dunn.
Hans Krombein.
Roushi MSX.
Guto Threadbear.
Chris Atwill.
Axeman.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Tim TJ Walker.
Ricardo Engel.
Heavy Metal Don.
James Bentley.
I bet Heavy Metal Don loved the Mosh chat earlier, by the way.
I'm sure he did. And if he's listening, mate, you still owe me some CDs. Come on.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Ma Woods.
Red Crested Breagle.
Kanan Rintz.
Lampton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Reese Wynn.
Clint Humphrey.
Mark Bilund.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepherd.
John Shepherd, congratulations, John Shepherd. Finished Final Fantasy 2 this week.
Oh, yeah.
One of only two in our Discord, including yours truly, who completed it. It is very much a feat. Just for continuing to bash away at it. So well done, John. My turn, Laurent Giroux.
And then Deadlock.
Aaron Maupin.
Jim Orbits IT.
John Veal.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick Fust.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stoddard.
Matt Sullivan.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Nice one. Yeah, good stuff. Really appreciate it, guys. Thank you very, very much.
So looking at this list, just quick shout out to King Kong Groover or Riz again. Do follow him. He announces on Discord when he streams. He always streams our Game Club games, and he's been streaming Soccer Kid, of course. And he already started streaming Wispball yesterday as well, I think.
Yeah.
So follow along there. He streams that, our Game Club game, and... normally has three streams every week, so he'll do the Game Club game once, and then maybe two other streams with some other games that he picks, and sometimes some quizzes and stuff. It's great fun. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he streams to play through games as well. He's a big supporter of ours. And
yes, definitely.
We're always grateful for him shouting us out and tagging us in on Twitter. So yeah, do give him a watch. He's very entertaining, particularly when he's struggling with the game. That's when it's most fun, because he goes ever so slightly. You can see him getting redder and redder as the time goes on.
Yeah, and do check out Mike's RetroTech as well. He's been working on that pet alike machine. It looks really, really good by now.
Yeah, good shout as well. And while we're here, just shouting out some of our patrons. Kena Inc. have had some really good retro content recently.
Yeah.
So they've got an episode. Now, this might still only be available for patrons. If it is, it'll be coming onto their regular feed soon. They've got a really good episode on Maniac Mansion.
Ah, cool.
That they recorded in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay.
And they've also done shows recently on the likes of Shinobi as well, the Shinobi series.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you've never listened to Kena Inc. and you think it's a modern gaming show, yeah, they do a lot of modern games, but there's also some really, really good retro content as well on there. So give those guys a listen.
Obviously, and, of course, if you are into the modern scene and the indie gaming scene, they do host Chris O'Regan's wonderful Sausage Factory podcast as well. Yes. So if you're into the whole game design scene, definitely check that out.
Yeah. Every single Friday, without fail, Chris O'Regan gets an episode out. And he's been doing it for years.
It's so impressive, yes.
It is. Anyway, onwards and upwards with our show.
Yes.
Soccer Kid, mate.
Soccer Kid, yes.
Little surprise, this one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a big surprise for me, actually. So should we just mention the vote? I mean, you are always so well prepared, so I'm waiting for you to read out how many percent the different games got and which games we were voting on, of course.
Have you got the poll in front of you?
No, I haven't at all. I'm just using your brain as usual, because you're always so well prepared. So, and our listeners you can hear Chris's brain creak right now. It's really trying to remember a nice little edit point
for the editor, isn't it? This is.
Yeah, I'm going to be the editor. This isn't going to be edited out. Come on, Chris. Go.
I've got it.
Yes, wonderful.
This is well worth reading these results, actually, because this was one of the closest polls we've had in a while. So we had four games up for the vote, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
We had Soccer Kid and we had Leander, which was, I think was one of my choices, wasn't it? Tearaway Thomas, which I think was your preference, and McDonaldland.
Yeah.
It was a competitive vote. In fourth place, with 11 votes, we had McDonaldland.
Yeah.
That's a strong start. And I think, I'm glad to see that it did get a few votes, because I think that's another misunderstood game. Tearaway Thomas, surprisingly, given how glowing you were about it on the episode, only 14.
Yeah. That's too bad. I would have liked to play that, but I'm actually glad we ended up with Soccer Kid.
Yeah, me too. My preference before we started playing Soccer Kid was Leander.
Mm-hmm.
The very, very first game ever released by Telltale Games. But that got 23 votes, and I reckon...
Not Telltale.
No. What did you say? No,
you said Telltale.
What did I say? Did I say Telltale?
Yeah, Traveller's Tales, right?
Traveller's Tales, of course. Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, Telltale have done many good things, but a 1990s platformer on the Amiga.
No, probably not.
Even beyond those guys. But the winner with 25 votes, 34.25% of the overall vote, was Soccer Kid.
Yeah.
And I was a bit worried going into it.
Yeah, me too.
Were you?
Me too. Sorry about the noise. It's just a cat. I think she just fell down the stairs. I thought cats were supposed to be always graceful, but apparently not.
The cat's been watching you play Stray and getting some ideas.
Yes, perhaps. No, I was really surprised that Soccer Kid won. It's a game I've picked up at least a handful of times, maybe even more, back in the day. And I remember spending a lot of time trying to get it running on DOS, as I mentioned the last time, for example. Mm. And every time I picked it up, played it 5-10 minutes, and thought, I can't get a hang of these weird controls. The whole controlling the ball and having the ball being a very important part of how to play this game, and going on to the next game. And I'm so glad that this was picked for the Game Club, because when it was picked, I think everyone on our little internal Telegram chat were saying, "Oh God, we're going to be playing this for a month. That's going to be horrible." And you only needed to spend like half an hour to figure out that this is actually a brilliant game. I mean, the controls are not hard at all. You just need to learn them, and there are different moves that you need to learn to do with the ball, and then you need to learn how to read the levels and read the enemies, and And then you're flying, really, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, I've always been put off. I mean, again, you know, like we said when it was chosen, I picked it up many times. I mean, yeah, I very much remember having this back in the day and being very excited. I was a fan of Chrysalis's other output, you know, the Manchester. Yeah. Pains me to say it, being a Liverpool fan, but I really did like those Manchester United games.
Of course you did.
I know, I was... Mm. I didn't tell any of my friends at the time, but I did. They were really good. Manchester United, the double, and Manchester United in Europe. They were really, really good football games.
Yeah.
So when I heard that Chrysalis, and it was really hyped, this game. I mean, the magazines were, the screenshots of this game were plastered all over the Amiga magazines. And I've actually been having to think about that over the past few weeks. And so this came out in 1990, the back end of 1993.
Yeah.
You know, when the Amiga probably wasn't quite on its very last legs by then, but I think there was a growing sense that it wasn't in rude health, and there was a lot of chat in the previews, and the game was actually delayed because there was a lot of interest from other platforms in having the game ported.
Yeah,
and I just wonder whether the Amiga press maybe went a little bit overboard for a game which undoubtedly looks brilliant in stills. I mean, it looks great in motion as well, but it does look really good on screenshots. And the fact that they knew some of the console platforms were interested in taking it, like the stuff in the magazines, like, and they say in the previews that, I don't know whether it was CU Amiga or whether it was the one, and the reporter said something like, this is undoubtedly going to be the greatest platformer of all time. I mean that is really high praise.
Yes.
Having played a work in progress build of the game. So it was just felt like it was, you know, it was seen as almost a potential great saviour for the platform.
Yeah.
And it's a good game, as we'll get into, but it's maybe not quite, it probably doesn't deserve that kind of pressure.
It's a good platformer. It's definitely no Mario, for example.
No.
So no, this isn't the greatest platformer ever made. It's a damn good one, and it's for the Amiga a really good one, because we all know that these Euro platformers are not the best platformers, but this is one of the best examples of a Euro platformer, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's right. So as we've said, it came out in the back end of 1993. It was originally due to come out early in 1993, but it was postponed for, among other reasons, one of the reasons that was cited was this idea that there was a lot of interest from other platforms, and it was eventually ported to a lot of other platforms, as we'll mention later. It developed and published, so developed in house by Chrysalis Software, as we've said, was particularly famous for a number of games, but in particular the Manchester United football franchise. It was based on the same...
Wasn't Chrysalis the guys who made Arabian Nights as well?
I was just going to say, and it used as the same engine as Arabian Nights. I mean, have you got any history with Arabian Nights?
Oh, I love that. Brilliant, brilliant game. Love that on the CD32. Okay, it's a great little game. Yeah, it's a good platformer come adventure game. Yeah, I really like that, yeah.
So can you see the similarities with Soccer Kid from recollection?
Yes and no. I mean, I can see the graphical similarities. Control-wise, Soccer Kid is something completely unique because of the ball. Working with the ball as your main weapon and your way of getting through the level. So I can't really compare Soccer Kid to much else. It's a very unique platformer.
Yeah, well, it was the engine was... coded by legendary, well, maybe that's overstating it. It was certainly veteran programmer Peter P. Harrop.
Yes, best known for the Monty Mole games, of course, because he single-handedly, I think, made the very first Monty Mole game and was involved in the rest of them because he was working for Gremlin, wasn't he? So yeah, Wanted yeah. Monty Mole was, it just says, the credits just say, by Peter Harrop. So,
Yeah, and there's some really good stuff on Pete Harrop and in the Bitmap books, Gremlin book. There's a lot of him in there because he was a mainstay of the 8-bit Gremlin scene.
Yes.
And, but it's so a, that, it's that'll a, be Mark's, around.
Mark's book. It's a great read.
Yeah.
So definitely, I suggest everybody who's interested in these old development houses pick that up. He interviews and talks to so many different people from Gremlin from back in the day, all the way from the very beginning to the end. It's a great read.
It's really good. Mm. Yeah, it's quite funny when you see the photographs in some of the previews. You see the photographs of the team sitting around, you know, working on Soccer Kid. And Peter Harrop is very much, I think, the elder statesman of the team, but he only looks in his early 30s.
Yep.
You forget how young these guys were, don't you? You know, when they started. So he was a veteran of the coding scene. He was probably no more than 33.
Nope.
And he was very much around. It was designed by principally three guys. Neil Adamson, who also did the graphics and some really, really nice graphics.
Yes.
Nigel Little, who was also the actual coder of the game.
Mm.
And Matt Furness, who is best known for his music and sound work across the 8 and 16-bit and beyond.
Yep.
But he did have some design input into the game. Now, what I'm not clear on is whether they divided up the levels between them or whether it was just a design by committee and they all worked on bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, I felt, and I think the feeling coming out of Discord was that maybe some levels are better than others. As always is the case on platform games, but it's possibly a bit uneven. We'll get into some of the levels in a minute.
Yeah, let's do that. I think actually the levels were quite good. What was really uneven was the difficulty on the bosses.
Yeah, it was.
Let's talk about those later.
Yeah. So that's it, really. I mean, it was released, as we said, in late 1993, and it did really well. It was really well received.
So we should probably mention as well that it was released for the original A500. There was an ECS OCS version. It was released for the A1200. There was an AGA version there. Yeah. And I think a year later, there was a CD32 version as well.
Yeah.
So this was out on all the Amigas in 1993, 1994.
And that's really interesting because I think they were talking to Nigel Little in one of the interviews on the previews, and they were asking him about the A1200 version. And it's really interesting what he said, and it made me think maybe this was part of the problem with the Amiga and the A1200. What he said was, we need to make this as accessible to as many people as possible, so we are focusing on the A500 version.
Mm.
And then because we won't have the time, the only thing we'll be able to do for the 1200 is probably just add a bit more colours and maybe do something with the sound. He said we don't have the time to completely redraw the graphics or design any more levels.
Hmm.
Perhaps that was the point. You know, because of the market, the huge user base of the A500, their focus was always on the largest section of the user base. And maybe if they'd gone out and actually designed more games for the 32-bit A1200, maybe we might have seen a bit more progression. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
Apparently, there is an extra level in the CD32 version.
Oh, really? Now I'm sad I didn't play that version. I played the AGA version. How about you?
I played the AGA version, although I did have a look at the A500 version, which is by and large identical, apart from it's not as colourful.
It feels like it plays just the same, but it's just
the same,
as you say, less colourful. So I went for the AGA version.
Yeah, so did I as well. To be honest, it was the first version I came to on the Mister, which is why I...
Mm.
The Mister does have all the versions, but that was just the first one that I came across.
Yeah.
So the CD32 version has that quite funny but a bit strange animated introduction.
Yep.
And apparently, although I can't verify this, I'm sure I read it somewhere that there is an extra set of levels. There is.
Okay.
And it might be Brazil.
Okay.
And they did intend to have more levels. And I think you can see a little bit of that on some of the versions' introductions. There were more levels planned and they had to cut them.
Okay.
So we ended up with just the five set of levels, isn't there, in the Amiga version that we've both played.
So in the end, this game was released for the 3DO, the CD32, DOS, so PCs, Game Boy Advance, Jaguar, Atari Jaguar, PlayStation, Super Nintendo, and of course the original Amigas as well. So this was ported very widely, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and the reviews got a little bit more stale the more it went on, understandably, didn't it?
Yeah.
The longer time went on, the were, you know, the Jaguar version, for instance, has a, you know, you're looking at kind of 2.5 stars, 65%.
Okay.
GBA, okay. The one reviewer could find on the GBA, 58%.
So okay,
yeah, the game got, yeah, as these games often do, you know, as they,
that's a shame, because I could see this being a good handheld game, actually, because it's, yeah, it's a game that, even though it is a platformer, it's something you'd like to pick away at over time and just,
yeah,
play a few levels, turn it off, play a few, yeah, levels more, because it, yeah, especially if you want to get the good ending, this is a thoughtful, slow-paced game that, yeah, that lends itself nicely to handheld gaming.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got some different names in different regions as well, doesn't it? It's called Kid Cleats. Is it in Japan on, okay, the Super Nintendo? It's called Kid Cleats.
Oh.
I had the details somewhere. I've not got them in front of me. I think, yeah, that's right. So I've got them here. So it's in North America on the Super Nintendo. It's known as The Adventures of Kid Cleats.
Okay.
And in Japan on the Super Nintendo and the 3DO, it's known as Great Soccer Kid.
Okay, because they had another game called Little Soccer Kid, or
I don't know. They must have been quite impressed with him, wasn't they, when they seen it? Well, yeah, he deserves the great moniker.
Could be. Yeah. So, mate, we've forgotten to do what we normally do. Just describe what is this game all about, actually. So, for our listeners who haven't been playing along,
you kind of did it earlier, but go on, have a go at it.
For those who haven't been playing along, this is a puzzle platformer with, it's a very slow, thoughtful one. You have to move slowly across the screen because enemies will be coming at you quite quickly and you need to be ready to address them. And the unique part about this is that you can't just jump on enemies or whatever you used to do to kill them. You need to kill them by kicking your soccer ball, your football, at them. So you need to control the ball at all times. If you just run around, it'll stick to his feet, won't it? He's really good at his dribbling. But if you are you're pointing your joystick in some direction, when you're pressing the button, he'll shoot in that direction. If you press the button without the direction, he'll start tapping it. What's that called in English?
The keepy ups.
Yeah, doing keepy ups. And then if you choose the direction, he'll shoot the ball in that direction, but he'll shoot it a bit higher than if you just do a normal kick. So you need to be in control of this ball at all times. You can shoot it directly up, you can shoot it at a 45 degree angle, you can shoot it straight, you can even do special moves like headers and stuff, but that's just to get a higher score. You don't need to do that, but you need to control this ball at all times. You need to make sure that the ball doesn't hit spikes, for example, because then you lose it and you've only got a fixed amount of balls to get through every level. And slowly progressing through the level, you can jump on the ball as well, which makes you jump a lot higher, and doing that makes it possible to access parts of the level that are often hidden for you, so you can find the actual cards. You need to collect cards when we used to do back in the day, when there was a World Cup or stuff like that. You would collect cards with the different players. That's what you need to do here, because the World Cup trophy has been stolen and we need to get it back, and for some reason we need to collect football cards to do that. And when you have all of the football cards for two levels for a world, then you get after you beat the boss, you get into a little bonus level where you can actually find a missing piece of the cup, right?
Yeah.
Did I leave something out?
No, I think that's about right, mate. The only thing I would say is that the amount of times you can recall the ball, you can make the ball appear at your feet, is not limited in a level.
No.
So at the start of each level, there's like a little information box that you can kick the ball against, and it'll tell you that in this stage there are, say, 5 or 6 cards, and there are it says 10 balls. Now, I played through the game not really knowing what that meant, because I was going way more than that on almost every level. I would use more than the amount of balls it said I had. And when I read the instruction manual, which I didn't do until after I'd finished the game, it tells you that when you go over that number of balls, that it starts to impact your points.
Ah, okay.
So you lose, you get a smaller bonus.
But it's only if you actually break the ball, right? If you can hold down the button to recall the ball and just magically appear at your feet, that doesn't count as you having lost the ball, does it?
I think it does, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought it was only when they got punctured by the spikes, for example.
No, I think...
I've definitely had penalties for that as well. I use that all the time.
Mm. I mean, I tried. I mean, on some of the levels that I was a bit more familiar with, I would challenge myself to try not to do it, to try and keep control of the ball.
Mm.
But there are times when you have to do it, like when you can't get the ball onto a platform, but you've got enemies that you need to take out quickly. So there are times when you don't really have a choice.
Yeah.
Steve Erickson started this month thinking he didn't know that if you held down the fire button, you could recall the ball.
Yeah, so quite a few people didn't know on the Discord forum.
No, he was railing against this game, saying, "This is so poorly designed. If only you could bring the ball back." And I think it was Dean, wasn't it, who said, "Steve, if you just hold down the fire button, you get another ball."
Yeah.
But again, I mean, the wonderful thing about this is that it's so elegantly designed because, you know, you've just described what Soccer Kick can do. Remember, this is an Amiga game. And you have one fire button.
Yeah.
And you can do all of those things. All of those things with just one fire button. It never ceases to amaze me how these really clever designers could get so much out of that, just a stick and one fire button.
Yeah. But it does use holding down the button and stuff like that. I mean, if you hold down the button while he's doing keep ups, what do you call again? Keepy uppies. That sounds very foolish. But if you hold the button down while you're doing that and you press up, for example, he'll jump up onto the ball and then you can press up or at an angle again and then you'll jump in that direction. And they're using lots of little details in the control scheme to get through that. Like Wispball does. Yeah. So it'll be good to play that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a plot.
Yes, there is.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And so aliens have stolen the World Cup trophy and it's been split into 5-6 pieces.
But they didn't just steal it, these aliens, on the eve of the World Cup final. What they did, and in the manual it says, as they made their escape, they crashed into an asteroid.
True.
And the World Cup shattered into pieces and fell back to Earth in its 5 pieces. Soccer Kid is watching this developer news story on his at home. God knows how old he's supposed to be. He's at home near London. And he decides he's going to go out and he's going to travel the globe. He's going to find these pieces of the World Cup and he's going to get it back to the States for the World Cup final in 1994.
Makes complete sense to me.
You know, in the animated introduction on the CD32 and some of the other ports, The spaceship doesn't crash into an asteroid; it crashes into a satellite.
Oh, okay.
There you go. There's a little factoid for you.
Mm.
But yeah, the plot is completely and totally ridiculous. But at least it does give a little bit of context for why this little kiddie is going around all these exotic locations.
And the game is divided up into 5 different worlds. Then
yeah. Yeah.
And in each world, you need to try to collect... I mean, each world will have 4 or 5 stages. And
3.
No. Counting the bonus stage...
Oh, no. So the 6 stages, isn't it? So each world is divided into, say, 3 stages, which is each divided into 2 halves, except for a couple of levels.
Yeah, exactly. And the first 2 of those, I'd like to say, are the ones that are carrying the cards, where you need to pick up 11 player cards.
Yeah.
It's always like this, the first one has 5 and the next one has 6, and then you need to figure out where they are hidden. And as you progress further in the game, they are really well hidden. A lot of these stages, I could hardly find any of them. But in the first 2 stages, for example, it's quite easy to find all 11 cards.
I've got a little bit of a problem with that. I mean, it's quite fun finding the cards, isn't it? You know, it adds something to the gameplay because without that, it turns into a bit of a run and kick game, doesn't it? Because all you're doing is running along, kicking the ball at the baddies as they come to you. Yep. So the fact the cards, it gives you a reason to explore the levels and really, you know, really take your time.
So the cards are definitely what makes this game last for a long time. I mean, if it was just running around and kicking, as you say, it would still be a good platformer, but it would be over quite soon. I mean, of course, there would be the whole learning the boss fight patterns that you'd be fighting with, but apart from that, there wouldn't be much to the game. This game, had I had the knowledge I have right now back in the day, I could have sunk so many hours into trying to perfect it, because the cards collecting does make a difference. And even if you have all the cards, you need to be good at the bonus level as well to actually get the piece of the cup. I failed that a number of times.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think they could have made more of that card collection thing, though? Because if, you know, we've just said that each world is split into three levels, which each split into two stages. So let's say on the first level in a world, you manage to find all 11 cards. You'll then, after the end of that level, you will go into the bonus stage. And if you complete that bonus stage on the first go... Which, I mean, they are difficult, and they get more difficult as it goes on. I mean, I failed in the final world. I failed. That was the first time I'd failed. If you collect it at the end of the first level, there's no incentive then to go and find the cards in the second and third levels, because you've been to the bonus stage, you've collected the piece of the World Cup. There's literally no point at all in going to the trouble of finding them.
See, I never thought about that, because I only thought you got to the bonus level once for every world. I didn't know you could enter it multiple times.
You go into the bonus level more than once if you fail the bonus level the first time round, and obviously if you've got other levels to go through. But if go in the first opportunity, if you get to the bonus level and you find a piece of the World Cup, you then can't go into the bonus level again, even if you find all 11 cards. So, you know, what's the point?
That's a bit weird. You're true. Yeah, that's true.
Don't you think they could have been... Because one of the things that is lacking in this game doesn't have many power-ups.
It doesn't have any? Well, it has...
Well,
you can get an invincibility for a short while, right?
And there's the speed boots, which I think I only found once
in
the first world.
Okay.
And they pretty much do, I think they do exactly the same thing as the invincibility. And with both of them, neither of them can you land on the spikes, but it does make you immune from, you know, regular damage.
Yeah, okay.
And then you've got a power, you've got, because in the game you have two hearts, and you basically get three hits before you lose a life, and you've got a limited number of lives, which carries over from world to world. So you can power up your heart. And in Russia, there is one power-up which gives you an extra heart capacity.
Yep.
So you can go from two to three. But that's it. There are no other power-ups at all.
I'm sure I had more than three hearts at the end.
Did you?
Five, something like that, yeah.
No. Can't have had five.
I'm not sure right now. I can...
Not even a man who uses save states.
Out, but, because I've
not
had
even
save
a
states,
man who
but...
uses save states can have five hearts.
I'm not sure. I'm sure I had more than just the three, but you might be right, mate.
Well, let's say that there's more than one. That is the only category of power up. Like, there's nothing else. There's nothing which makes his kicks more powerful, or gives him the ability to jump higher, or
nothing. Frank, you have all of the abilities you need from the get-go, which is sometimes quite refreshing as well. I mean, you have the ball, you have lots of moves you can do with the ball. If you learn how to master those, well, the world is open for you from the get-go. And I kind of like that, actually. And it is a slow, thoughtful game. This isn't a game where you need power-ups so you can end up blasting through the levels. This is a slow, thoughtful puzzler, so you need to
methodical.
Inch your way across the screen and just, if you see an enemy, you need to see, okay, this is this kind of enemy. The enemies are kind of samey. I mean, even in the different worlds, they just get a new coat of paint.
Different sprites.
I mean, Yes, different sprites, but they do the same thing. So you learn to recognize, this big guy is going to throw stuff at me if I get too close, so I need to keep my distance. And you can do this nice little kick where you're actually moving away from the enemy, but quickly moving around and kicking the ball that direction and then going the other way as well to retreat. Mm. It's you quickly learn how to navigate it, and still they do put in new enemies and new enemy types continuously throughout the game. So all of a sudden there'll be an enemy like the frog that jumps at you.
Yeah,
the first couple of times you meet it, you'll die, and then you figure out, okay, how do I handle this little enemy type? So that part of the game I actually really liked, and I didn't mind the lack of power-ups at all, because I like the fact that I have the skill set that I need. Yeah. I just need to learn how to get through the different levels and the new enemies they throw at me.
Yeah.
What they could have done, is more environmental puzzles.
Yeah, that's another thing I was going to pick up on in my notes.
Yeah, so the actual design of the platforming, they could have done so much more there. I mean, give me some more challenge in reaching the heart to get to places. The only thing they did there was those annoying birds. And I think I've come to the conclusion that I hate birds in all games. Birds or bats or just flying critters are annoying in platform games. And these birds, they were, oh man, annoying with a vengeance. It's so bad.
They were, but why? Because they move really predictably. They just go back and forwards. They never change their range of motion.
They are annoying because you can't see them, because you jump up. You'll jump up to a platform. You haven't seen them before because you're jumping high. You're doing that special jump you can do on top of the ball. You're jumping high up to some platform, and then there's a bird, and you can't do anything. You can't move. You can't do anything. You're going to get a hit at that point.
Yeah.
So you should have known beforehand that the bird was there, and you should have kicked the ball up to hit it.
Yeah.
And then you should go there. And I hate level design that makes you lose a heart if you don't know the level by heart already.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't like the birds. All the other enemies I kind of liked, even though some of them were hard, like the moped riders in Italy.
Oh, they were the worst in the whole game. Yeah. They move so fast.
They're so fast. You need to really have faster reactions. But you've got to know that
they're coming, haven't you, really, with the moped guys? You just got to know where they are.
So I got to a point where I was so, like, I was inching forward so slowly that I would get them even though I didn't know they were coming, because I could just
quickly react
to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's most enemy types I found that I could learn how to handle, but the birds I hate those birds.
Just going back to just on the birds. I mean, it can be worse than losing a heart, because this game also has the dreaded knockback.
Doesn't it?
When you get hit. So the worst thing is because this has lovely verticality, this game, doesn't it? Almost every single level has reasons for you to go up high.
Yeah.
And I love that in platformers, especially 2D platformers. I love that verticality and really enjoyed it in this game. The worst bit, though, is when you're going up high from platform to platform, and you don't see a bird that's off the screen, and you jump to a platform, the bird hits you, and then you're knocked back off the platform, and beneath you is spikes or water, which are instant kills. And all hearts gone.
Yep.
And that is really painful, because these lives, I mean, you have, I think the game starts you off with 3 or 4 lives. And so that
I
is
have the
all
solution
you,
to that, mate. I have the solution, the perfect solution.
What is it?
Save state.
Yeah.
So I initially started playing this. I know you played this on the Mister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I initially started playing this on the Mister as well. But then, for various reasons, I was at the cottage for a long time, and it turned out it was a lot easier for me to just play this on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
And that meant I was playing it through RetroArch. So just double click those little thumbsticks and say save. And on you go. That was a brilliant way to experience this little game. So actually, that is, I would recommend anybody play through this game using save states.
Yeah.
And then if you really loved it, go back, play it the hard way, the real way, using the Mister or real Amiga, and then try to get all the cards, the player cards, and the good ending, right?
Yeah, but mate, it's not that hard. Like, you know, it really isn't difficult.
No, it's just time consuming.
But you can so on real hardware or the Mister. If you're playing on Amiga, I don't know what other platforms do, but you gives you the option to save after every world.
Yes. So that means that getting through Italy would have taken me 5 hours, because that's how many times I died at Pavarotti.
Pavarelli. Pavarelli, as he's known in the game.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that
was he
that,
Pavarelli?
To be honest. Yeah, he's Pavarelli, yeah.
Pavarelli. I just read that as Pavarotti.
Pavarelli.
Didn't even think about it. Okay.
Yeah. We'll go on to... Let's talk about the levels in a minute. We talk about the bosses. But yeah, yes. I just want to... Yeah, just on some of the... What you said about the environmental puzzles there is absolutely bang on. I mean, things like, you know, little switches that you had to kick... You'd have to kick the ball at, you know, to make a platform appear or to make a platform move or things like that, which feel like they would have been, yeah, I don't know, quite easy to put in if they, you know, maybe they wanted to go with something that was pure action rather than having it, you know, the player get bogged down with puzzles. But I, you know, I think it would have been really nice because the game is, the pacing of the game is so deliberate and quite slow at times, because what you cannot do in Soccer Kid at all is make blind drops from platforms where you don't know what's beneath you. You're going to die. You're going to lose a heart if you do that. You can't jump up to platforms where you don't know what's above you, because if you do that, you will inevitably hit a bird. So you can't do that. So you have to be really careful and really methodical about how you move through these levels. And that is the fun bit. You know, the fun bit is, right, what's around the corner here? What's on the next screen? What am I going to have? Okay, these mopeds guys are coming. There's a guy throwing wrenches at me there. Right, I know how to deal with them. And although the enemies do get repetitive because there's variations on the theme from world to world, that's what keeps you going. Just having some kind of something just to mix that up doesn't have to be too taxing, but just some kind of light environmental puzzling would have been really, really well suited to this game, I think. But we didn't get it, did we?
Nope. Nothing of the kind.
Let's talk about some of those levels then. And then we can pick up some of the enemy types that we liked or didn't like as we go through. So it starts off in England, which is a which starts off in a little town, so to be his journey. You get the levels here are, you get the English town, you get the English countryside, and then you get London. And I mean, this it isn't really too taxing to get through the England levels. I think if you play it, once you learn the controls and you learn that you can't just rush through this like a Sonic or even a Mario, like it doesn't have that same kind of rhythm as a Mario game. Once you realise that you do have to move very slowly, really the England set of levels aren't terribly difficult to get through, despite the annoying birds and the builders throwing wrenches at you. Once you know the strategy, you can generally get through them. The boss of the England levels is a rugby player, which again is a reasonably gentle introduction, I think, isn't it, to the bosses?
Yeah.
Because it's not difficult. You know, he chucks his rugby ball at you. You got to jump over that. Yeah. His name's Gareth, by the way. Did you know that?
No.
His name is Gareth. And you know these baddies have names, you know. So the guy, you know, the little skater guys in the first set of levels in England?
Mm-hmm.
They're called Stu. The builder guy is Derek. And then we've got Farmer Giles in the countryside. And then Gareth is the guy that is the rugby player. Yeah, again, he's a rogue rugby player, the manual describes him as.
Okay.
Not terribly difficult. Jump over him, kick the ball at him as many times as you can, but stay out of his way. And he goes down reasonably easy. It's a nice introduction to the game. Almost serves as a long tutorial. Nothing terribly difficult. But then you get to Italy.
Yes.
And I think Italy is the most difficult set of levels in the whole game.
No, I don't agree on the levels. I think there were levels later on that were a lot harder, but the boss was definitely the hardest of the game, if you ask me.
Pavarelli.
Yes, Pavarotti.
He's unlike any other boss in the whole game, isn't he?
Yeah. So Pavarotti is standing in the middle. singing at you. And when he sings, these musical notes come floating towards you and they hurt
Think
you.
Popeye.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to avoid those. And you avoid those by, at the very, very last second or millisecond before he starts singing, you have to run under him. Yeah. So you can actually avoid his attack like that. Took me the longest time to figure out that you could run under him, that he was that you could actually run under that platform he was standing on.
Yeah.
When you finally figure really that out, it took me the longest time to get the timing right, because the timing needs to be not pixel perfect, but like millisecond perfect. You need to run on the right frame to just avoid that. And it's so hard to do. So that figuring out how to beat Pavarotti took me so long. I mean, the rugby player, he was kind of easy because you could just button mash it. Just kick the ball as quickly as possible, and you didn't even need to learn his pattern. Because if you just got there with two hearts, you'd get past him. Yeah, Pavarotti was a completely different deal. So I didn't enjoy Pavarotti at all, and I was or Pavarelli, as you call him. But I was a bit nervous after meeting him that this was how the game was going to be. Yeah, but I was happy to find that all of the three other boss fights after that were a lot better and actually had patterns that was kind of easy to figure out but still hard to master, so you could get some satisfaction out of those boss fights. But I think if you're playing this game and you're stopping at Pavarotti, persevere, because after getting past this guy, it's only going to get better.
Yeah. I mean, I did it in the end. I think I was on my fourth go through the Italy levels. And, you know, the levels are fun. But I can tell you now that after you've been through the same set of levels, which by the time you've been through them two or three times, you know well enough that I was getting through those levels but barely taking a hit, to be honest. I got to know them so well. I'm not sure what I'd have done if I'd have lost to Pavarelli for a fifth time.
Mm.
I'm not sure I could have brought myself. I think I would have had to have then gone to the Steam Deck and played it how you did. But I think I just got lucky, because I was convinced I was never going to do it. And in the end, he went down. I was very pleased to see him go down. But Italy is the set of levels, other than America, where I'd given up, to be honest. I didn't get the World Cup piece in Italy.
I think Japan was quite hard as well. I mean, the bullet train, for example, and especially actually the levels just before the bullet train were quite hard to get through.
Ah, let's come on to the Japanese levels in a minute, because they were my favorite levels.
Yeah.
We then go on to Russia. So when Pavarotti goes down, we go to Russia, where we've got one level in a freezing forest, which the Russian levels, probably because of the music, because I thought the music on the Russian levels was brilliant. Each world has world themed in a rather cliched way. I mean, the game is one big cliche. You know, in Italy, you get the Italian waiter with a mustache, and you get Pavarotti, and so you get a lot of these. You do get a lot of these cliches within the world, and the music is cliche too, but it's fun, and it's classic Math Furnace. It's perky and it's catchy. And it's fun, and I particularly like the music in the Russian levels. After the freezing forest, we come to, and remember those sledges? Remember the sledges in the freezing forest?
Yes,
they were a nightmare.
Yes, they were. They were the reason that I was inching even more slowly across the screen in that level.
They just come from nowhere, those little sods, and then they come back and get you as well if you don't take them out.
Mm.
They're a nightmare. You again get to the battleship, one of my favourite levels in the whole game. So the battleship, unusually, we'd never seen this before, has all 11 cards in one continuous level.
Mm.
It's just quite difficult. Like I did, I had to do this a couple of times and figure it out. I did lose a few lives first couple of times.
The battleship was really difficult.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's so much fun, though. And again, the verticality of the... There's not quite optional routes, but you can either take the low route going across the ground, or you can go from the funnels to funnels and go take the high route.
Yeah.
There's plenty of variety as to how you move through the level. And it's really cool graphically, isn't it? Because you have wind effects and you have the background scrolling and this big ship. Mm. Really, really nice to look at.
Yeah, it is a pretty game. And this is now, we're at the point now where we get all of these platforming staples that we know these days with the moving platforms and swinging platforms that you need to jump onto. And, well, we know those from many platform games these days, but everything is here that you're used to in a good platformer.
Yeah. Again, I think we probably could have had a bit more of that, you know, the... The swinging platforms and stuff like that, maybe a bit more variety.
Especially because this is a Euro platformer where the controls are actually quite tight. Normally, we're used to Euro platformers being a bit loose in the controls, whereas we want something like the Mario to really get that nice and tight feel. But this is actually really well controlled. So you can hit those platforms. You always feel it's your own fault if you miss them, right? Yeah. So it's a satisfying platformer to play in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we move on to the Red Square, which is the final set of Russian levels. I love the Christmas trees on Red Square. You know, you can climb up the Christmas trees. And that's really cool. And it looks really nice. And
you have to kill the squirrels, which is a bit harsh. But otherwise, they'll kill you.
They're in the first set of Russian levels, aren't they? They come out of those big tall trees in the first set levels. And they are unlike anything we'd encountered up to this point. You have to make sure you kill them before you start to climb the tree because they will get you.
Yep.
But again, if you're patient and just wait for them to come down to the bottom, they take a couple of hits and then they go. Again, you've just got to be patient with this game.
You definitely do.
So we move on to Japan, which... I think it's my favourite set of levels. Start off, you know, reasonably. The countryside isn't a lot to write home about. It's pretty similar to what we'd seen before.
Yeah.
Variations on a theme with enemies. But we then get to the bullet train.
Yes.
This is a brilliant level. This is another one where it's all cards on one level.
Yep.
And graphically, it's absolutely superb, this level.
It's a great level. It's a good fun level as well, but it was I found it a bit hard. Not hard as the battleship, which was a lot harder than this, but I did make a lot of mistakes on the bullet train. But it's a great level, and it's one of those levels where you really have to be careful. Don't try to rush it.
I like those bits where the signs are coming towards you, you know, really fast, and you have to dodge. Again, it's something that we'd not seen before in the game, so it's a nice little bit of variety.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, whether I was just in the flow of it by this point, I didn't find it too bad. I found it really enjoyable. I didn't find it too difficult. In fact, I think I got all 11 cards on the bullet train level because a lot of them you had to drop down, you know, into the carriages.
Yeah.
Which is fun. But we then get to the factory, which, again, is unlike any other level we'd seen before. So these levels are reasonably A to B, aren't they? You know, it's got verticality, but the idea is you are going from A to B. There's only one route to get through them.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to take out the baddies. The factory, however, was the first set of levels where I felt lost.
Mm.
Like, there are multiple ways through these two stages.
Yep.
And
you
lots
need to
of
take
different
all
power.
The routes if you want to pick all of the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, and also there is another power up here that we didn't mention earlier. You get extra time. There's a clock in one of the chests.
Okay, I don't think I found that one. Yeah,
because there is a time at which, you know, I don't think ever came close to running out of time.
Yeah, me neither.
But the fact that this level actually gives you extra time suggests that there is. It is designed to be explored. You know, it really is going into every nook and cranny. And I tell you, if you did end up with more hearts than three, it wouldn't surprise me if I'd missed something in this level because it feels impossible to explore every bit.
Yeah. So I was just checking it. I think you're right, mate. I only had three hearts.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that because I watched somebody play the ending of it and they only had three as well. So
I'm just misremembering. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's really good fun in the factory. And it really did feel like... I mean, I wish there were more levels like this where you did have... felt like you were exploring and there were multiple routes through and there were chests that I know I'd missed that I could see. They were unopened. And I thought, well, if I do come back to this, at least I know I've got some replayability there.
Yeah. I love this level as well. And it was a level that was challenging, but mostly because of the exploration, trying to figure out how you get to different parts of the level. And I think maybe it was actually challenging, but as you said, you get into the flow at some point. Because there were some devious enemies here. For example, some of those robots, when you killed them, they would catch fire, and the fire would spread across the floor. So you need to avoid that as well. So it was actually quite a hard level, but at this part, you've been playing the game for so long that you're really into the flow.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Metal Gear, because in there's robots who aren't robots, you know, so you have to, you might get like a row of robots and only one of them will be actually
I will always kick the ball just to see if it hits something.
Again, you've got to be so careful. We then move on to the final set. Well, certainly in the Amiga computer version, the final set of levels, which is the USA, where we get some... we get the Wild West, complete with stereotypical and cliched Native Indians running around throwing hammers at us.
Yes.
We get the Babe Watch Beach, as it's called in the manual. The second set of levels, where there are no babes, but there is plenty of sand and really annoying clam enemies and alligators that hatch out of eggs and run towards you.
Yep. I didn't find this level too hard, actually.
Did you?
No, I didn't find it too hard. It was.
Oh, no,
was
you didn't.
No.
So you know what? First time through, what really got me with the beach balls, I couldn't get the rhythm to go underneath the beach balls. They kept hitting me. But the second time through, I just realised I just had to basically stand still and let them bounce over me, and I was fine.
Yeah. No, my problem initially was the clamps. They were a bit of annoyance. Yeah, they were again, you quickly come to terms with how to handle this enemy type, and then you just get on with it.
Just hold back and kick the ball at them. And then we get to New York City, where it all ends. It's where the World Cup final, I can't remember whether it was in New York City, but it is in our world here, where we get the pneumatic drillers and Ricky the Rollerblader.
And some quite good boss fights, actually. I like the the Japan boss as well, and
The sumo. I think we did mention that.
Yeah, the last couple of boss fights were really good. I mean, they were the kind of boss fights where you only die 3-4 times, and then you figure out, this is the pattern. This is what I need to do, and then you need to do it for quite a long time. So there's still this whole sweaty palms issue when you're playing this game, because it's not easy. It's doable, but you have to do the same perfect moves. 10-15 times at least, and then you get through it. But I like that kind of boss fight. That's good.
I like the ones where you have to work out the timing, like the American footballer at the end. You have to work out the timing of his throws. Then you need to position yourself on the jump, because you know he's going to come across the screen and he's going to jump. That he does the same thing every single time. Pavarotti wasn't random. It just felt unfair at times that the window of getting out of the way was just too small.
Yep.
Whereas the other bosses, actually, they give you a chance. And they aren't hugely difficult. I died the first time. The thing without playing with Saint States is what it does give you is a bit of jeopardy. I knew that if I died on the bosses, I wasn't just loading in a save state at the start of that last stage. I was going all the way back and having to play through the levels again. So... yeah, I mean, that happened to me once on the American set of levels, but on the second time through, I did it. Mm.
Yeah, that is definitely the right way to be playing these games, of course, if you have the time for it. So
So after this emotional, lengthy journey that the poor soccer kid has made, he's finally made it to America. But if Mads and I are controlling him, doesn't have all the pieces of the World Cup.
Nope.
I had 4 out of the 5.
Mm.
And... the poor lad, having tried his best, just gets told to go home.
Yes, go home, soccer kid.
Go home, soccer kid.
Mm.
He hasn't seen his parents for months.
As we mentioned in the beginning, the very beginning of this episode, that's a horrible way to end the game.
Horrible.
I mean, that's just unfair. Let's say that you still save the day if you get to the end because you beat all the bosses and we're going to make a new World Cup trophy. It's going to be good. The World Cup is going to go. And then if you pick all of the right pieces up during the entire game, you get the extra bonus good episode where there's unicorns and rainbows and everything is just fine and it's the original World Cup trophy that's there. But come on, designers, don't give us this crap. Man, you've gotten through this entire game, but you sucked. So here, have a sad soccer kit and go home.
It's so harsh. Like, you don't get anything. It's basically like game over. You get soccer kids sitting. You get
exactly, and that's how it feels.
Face.
And that is how I felt when I finished Oddworld, the Apes Odyssey, the very first time. I was so satisfied. I got through this entire game, and this for me was a tough game back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I was told, well, it's game over. You should probably just start over because you sucked at this game. Start over.
You don't even get any credits.
No.
Like, and nope. the thing with Soccer Kid is let's say you went through England and you were just learning the game and you didn't collect the World Cup piece, you didn't collect all the cards in one of the England levels, but you had done in the second, third, fourth, and fifth levels.
Yep.
Like, you didn't know after the England, you didn't know that if you didn't collect all the World Cup pieces, you wouldn't be able to finish the game.
Nope.
And you might play through the whole of the rest of the game and then to find that actually from the very first level you were doomed not to be able to finish it.
Yeah. The thinking from the designer's standpoint has probably been that this adds longevity to the game because then you'd be playing it all over and trying to get it right.
Yeah.
And I do agree, but why not just give us a normal ending and then hint at, well, there could be this good ending that you could get instead. I mean, that would be so much better because the feeling of getting all the way through it and not losing, but still getting a game over, it's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Well, you could get through the whole game without ever being hit once. It's possible. Yep. You could do it. And if you don't collect all the World Cupies, you might never get hit. You would still. I mean, I do you know what, mate? I'm not even going to say it's an ending. I'm going to say that it's game over because if you had, and thank you to YouTube for this information, because if you had collected all pieces of the World Cup, you fight a final boss.
Oh, there's more game.
Yeah, so there is just, it's not even a stage. You run from left to right across a football pitch, and you're confronted with the alien. I think the alien's called Scab. You are confronted with this alien, and you fight a final boss. The only thing I would say, if you're thinking, oh God, I've missed out on content, I need to go back and play it, it's so pitifully easy that it barely... I mean, I watched this guy play it who... I mean, you essentially just stand in the middle of the screen, you have to jump over one thing that gets fired at you, and then you just kick the ball at this alien 20 or 30 times and he goes down. The guy who I was watching play it, I would assume the guy or gal who I was watching play it, was so bored, he started trying to fire overhead kicks. So he was trying to take the boss out with only overhead kicks, which brings me onto which I should have mentioned earlier. I wish some of the special kicks caused more damage. You know, because there's no incentive to try, because the overhead kicks are quite, they look really cool, but there's no real incentive. They're quite tricky to pull off.
So and the incentive is scoring, because points, when you're done with a level, it says how many headers and overhead kicks have you done, and that gives you a bonus.
Yeah, but who cares about points, other than the fact you get an extra life for every 200,000 points?
Yeah, true. I completely agree. It's a bit of a shame that those special moves weren't special, really. I mean, I ended up not using them at all.
No? Well, why would you? I never, ever hit... I messed around with the overhead kicks. But why would you use them? I mean, you don't need to.
Not true.
Ever.
At least they should, as you said, have been more powerful and then be usable in the boss fights. That could have been the very minimum of it.
Yeah, and then you get a bit of risk and reward. It might be tricky to pull off, but if you do pull it off, you're going to cause a huge amount of damage.
Yep, that would have been good. Definitely.
But the person who I was watching play it, I think, got so bored and it was so easy that he or she then did it without... with only using overhead kicks. took them ages. But then you get a nice... I mean, I think they were playing the CD32 version, so you got a nice then animated ending which shows Soccer Kid posing with the World Cup with his foot on this alien's head. And great. Got some credits, some lovely music. Well done, you know. And the only thing that that person did that we didn't is collect one stupid World Cup piece.
Okay.
Leaves a bit of a sour taste.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And it seems like I need to scratch that from my list of completed games for 2022 because I haven't completed soccer yet.
No, mate. I think you can put it down as completed. I think you've invested enough time in it to say that you've completed it. As I said, that last boss is barely worth getting through to.
So apart from getting the bad ending, I thoroughly enjoyed my time with Soccer Kid, so all good.
Yeah. Have you got anything that you want to say? Any special mentions? I mean, I know we've touched upon the graphics, but have you got anything that you particularly like to say?
No, I'd like to say that if you pick this game up and you have... Well, the choice paralysis that we all have when playing these old games, because we have so many ROMs for all these systems. Do give this a bit of time. Look at the manual, check out the moveset, and remember that holding the button down recalls the ball so you can actually continue the game, Steve. That would be good, and I think most of you will actually enjoy this game. Do remember that this is a slow, thoughtful game. Don't just run through it because you'll die immediately. But steady goes, steady. Just take it steady and be slow. And it's a great fun game to get through, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, and I was worried about it. I'm so glad that I spent the time and was forced to go back to it.
Yeah,
because,
me too.
Well, not forced, but you know that it was something that we played in the game club because. It's a really nice game in there. Yeah, I mean, it's not the greatest platformer ever made. Of course, it's not. It's probably right now my favorite Amiga platformer. I would say now.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. It's still not over Tearaway Thomas for playability for me, but it's definitely up there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its inconsistencies. You know, there's that horrible difficulty spike at the end of Italy that we talked about. I definitely think there is a little bit of repetition as well in some of the levels, although you're quickly bailed out by, you know, the next level being the bullet train or the battleship or, those great factory levels in Japan. So it does rescue itself. Not every level is going to be as good as some, but I think if you plough through this game, there's definitely things to look forward to towards the end. And, you know, if you think you're only going to play it once, just make sure that if you collect all those damn World Cup pieces, because if you're going to play through this, you're going to take the time to do it. You probably want to get the proper ending and fight that ridiculously easy final boss. But it looks really beautiful as well. I mean, it's a showcase for what even the A500 could do in the hands of, you know, great artists and good designers. It looks, I mean, the animation's absolutely spot on. The ball physics are really, really good. It all feels very authentic and snappy, and as Manza said, you know, feels really tight. And it's a shame in some ways that they didn't go on to make maybe a sequel, or which could have fleshed out some of the mechanics or even you know, other platformers. This, as they certainly did make games after this, but they didn't make anything like Soccer Kid. And when you think about it, there hasn't been really a game since quite like Soccer Kid.
No, this is definitely quite a unique experience. That's why I think everybody should pick it up and try it at least for half an hour. Just try to get used to that control, that using the ball as your main weapon there. It's great fun trying to get to terms with how to control him. And once you get it and play through the first handful of levels, if you didn't love it then, just stop there. Say you've learned enough, because it's just going to be more of that, of course. But if you like that... Hang in there, and do play it with save states. And I'm going to say something now that's a heresy for an Amiga game. I played this using a joystick on the Mister, and I played it with the original controls, and it was all good. But if you're playing it using a controller, which I was when I was playing on the Steam Deck, please do remap a button to jump.
No.
Because that just makes it so... more controllable.
Man.
So don't tell Riz that I did this, but I actually mapped a button to jump, and I was happy for it, and it was a great way to experience this this game. And I would say it's still it's a right way to experience it as well, because if I was playing the CD32 version, I would have had that option anyway. But I just remapped the AGA version to do that as well.
Do you know what? I'm going to say it now. When playing a home computer platformer, I would not swap up to jump for any other way of being able to jump. It just feels so right with the joystick in your hand.
Yes, if you're actually holding a SIP stick or a Competition Pro, yes, definitely, definitely. If you're holding a controller, it doesn't feel right.
See, I did play some of this on the Steam Deck, on the Emu Deck.
Yeah.
And I tried, I did remap the button. It just didn't feel right. Even okay. Using the analog stick, I went back to up to jump.
For me, it feels just right. I mean, if you're on, and I mostly didn't use the analog stick. I just used the D-pad. When you're playing it like that on a pad, getting a button for jump is just so much better for me.
You know, the thought of playing something like Mario, where you, the 2D Marios, and having to press up to jump, fills me makes me feel sick. Yeah. But actually, I couldn't imagine, and I did try. For me, this game is built, and it is literally built with a joystick in mind. It just didn't feel, and I haven't tried the Evercade version either. And they've got the Pico, because Pico Interactive acquired the rights to Soccer Kid and published it, I think, on the PS1. But there's a version of it on the Pico Interactive card for the Evercade. Man, I mean, these games, they need to be played with the joystick for me. I mean, obviously, play these games however you can and however you want, but I feel like I'm just too much of a traditionalist. I really enjoyed the mechanics of up to jump. I couldn't imagine it any other way.
So I find it works brilliantly when you have a joystick in hand. But for me, when I have a gamepad in hand, no, it just doesn't work for me for some reason. Yeah.
There you go, eh? Oh, and by the way, if anyone's playing this on the Mister, don't forget that when you save your game, you have to press F10 if you're using the WHD low version to go back to workbench.
I made that mistake.
Don't just reset your Mister or power it off, because it won't save. I made that mistake twice after the England levels and was cursing, wondering why it wasn't saving. Quick Google search availed me of the answer. Yeah, just you hear to hear, press F10 to quit back to workbench first.
Yep.
Save you a lot of time. Very nice, mate. There we go.
Yeah.
Let's close the door on Soccer Kid for now.
Yes. And play some Whizball.
Got plenty of Whizball to look forward to, haven't we, over the next month?
I'm actually really looking forward to finally getting proper into Whizball. I love sensible software, so it'll be good to finally learn what it's all about with Whizball, because I never got out of the bouncy part, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, we'll be diving into that and coming back in a month or so to chat about that.
Yes.
And, in the meantime, do you have any shout outs or anything else you would like to say? We've done loads of shout outs, haven't we, already? But
we have.
Have you got room for any more?
Room for any more shout outs to Matt, Steve, and Dean, of course. But apart from that, no, I'm good, mate.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, shout out to everybody in Discord, as always.
Yes.
I'm loving the chatter around the community playthrough. We're almost a year now into our lifetime run through almost every single game ever released in sequential order. Not quite that bad, but there are a lot of games on the list. And it got a bit quiet with Final Fantasy 2 and Castlevania 2, and I did wonder whether...
For good reasons.
But it's been absolutely thriving over the last couple of days, and it's great. For someone who's never played Link to the Past for any huge amount of time, I absolutely can't wait to get stuck into it. Super Metroid next as well, so there's still plenty to look forward to when we're in December. Yeah. Shout out to the boys, Matt, Steve, and Dean. Christmas episode, hopefully going to find a date for that coming up. And as we move towards episode 300, and also to Andy and Jim on Playthrough, where we'll be recording with them this time tomorrow. As we said earlier, www.playthroughpod, if you want to come and listen to us talk about Dead Space 2. And I'm done, mate.
Yeah, shout out to Reese as well. Shout out to Reese. Still waiting for that bikini stream, mate, but let us know when it's happening.
Let us know, and we'll advertise it far and wide.
Yes, indeed.
I'm all waffled out.
Me too. This was good, mate.
Yeah. Time to say goodbye, and we'll see our listeners will hear from us next month.
From now on.
Bye.
Unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than you wanna